Hello, all. Thank you for joining me today. We're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, continuing our study in this book. Thank you for joining me again. Thank you for staying with me on this study. I sure hope that there have been some things that we've done study together that are helpful to you. And I'm thankful that all are staying safe and healthy. As we come to chapter 10, Paul is going to shift gears. He spent the first 7 chapters trying to reconfirm his relationship with the Corinthians. There have been those who had come in and who had started spreading lies about Paul. And unbelievably, the Corinthians began to believe part of them. Not all, but some had. And so Paul's greatly concerned about how they have received his first letter. Titus comes and tells him things are great. And Paul rejoices about that. And so, having reestablished that relationship and his confidence in that relationship, we see the full bloom of that in chapters 8 and 9, when he begins to insist to them that they get about fulfilling the commitment they had made the year before about the collection for the poor saints in Jerusalem. Having concluded that part, now he shifts to chapter 10. And you can tell verses 1 and 2, I think he begins with an element of sarcasm here, which is indicative of the strength with which he's going to speak in chapters 10 through 12. Again, remember, we have in chapter 1 and 2 those who have come in and begun to challenge Paul and his apostleship. They've accused him of being a vacillating. You can't count his word. When he's with you, he's one way. When he's away from you, he's another way. And so Paul kind of plays on that in verses 1 and 2 when he says, "Now I, Paul myself, am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ." That idea of meekness is under control, not too angry, not too mild. He looks at gentleness, sweet reasonableness. Basically, he's talking about, I'm not angry enough, I'm not over angry. And so he has this element of mercy about him. And then he begins this, "Who in presence and lowly among you, but being absent and bold toward you." That's what they've been saying about Paul. And I think Paul just plays on that. "But," he says, "I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with that confidence which I intend to be bold against some who think of us as if we walk according to the flesh. If I need to be bold," and he has said that before, "I will be bold. However, the reason that he forestalls coming in boldness is found in verse 6. He's given them opportunity for their obedience to be full or to be complete. He wants to give them the opportunity to right themselves. And he has every confidence they will. And so he says, "But I beg you, no. Please don't test me in this. If I need to come bold, I will come bold. But I'm going to be bold against some. Don't test my courage in this. They're testing me. You don't test my courage." And they think we're going to do this after the flesh. Paul said, this is not going to be a fleshly battle. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal. If they think that we're going to come in and we're going to use fleshly means of carnal warfare to accomplish our purposes, they're going to be wrong. They're going to be surprised. They're going to be mistaken. We're going to break down every stronghold, every fortification. We're going to cast down every evil imagination. So here's their knowledge that usurps the apostleship of Paul and sets themselves against his authority. Here is the knowledge that sets themselves against God. And Paul is saying, when we come, here's the battle. The battle is for the hearts and the minds. They're fighting a carnal battle using carnal means. We're not going to fight that battle. We're going to battle, and the warfare is going to be for the minds of people. And he said, in doing that, we're going to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, being ready to punish all disobedience. We'll come with boldness against all disobedience, but we're going to give you a chance for your obedience to be fulfilled. That's why we have delayed coming. But now it's time. Now it's time for us to take on these Judaizing teachers. So he says, "Do not look at things according to the outward appearance." He says, If anyone is convinced in himself that he is in Christ, let him again consider that in himself, that just as he is in Christ, so are we. And the point is, if that's what they think about themselves, then give us the benefit of the doubt that we're in Christ. If they think themselves in Christ, then let that be reciprocal. Let them think that we are in Christ as well. What he's saying here is, I want you on my side. When trouble arises, I want you to be with me. But the first thing I'm going to do, I'm not going to jump. I'm not going to jump and crush all opposition immediately. That's not the first thing I'm going to do. But what I want is I want you to be on my side. You tell me, they say, translated, when I'm behind the keyboard, I'm strong, but when I'm with you in the flesh, I'm weak. Look at this. If they consider themselves a Christian in Christ, then so consider me in Christ. Give me the same benefit of the doubt. He knows what a Christian is, and he's confident that he is one. So he must know what makes another man a Christian. So if they know what makes a man a Christian, then so consider me a Christian, is what he's saying. What Paul is saying is plain as day. These personal slanders against he and himself are creating a great chasm between them. But Paul says there's no comparison between the two. There's nothing here that will compare between the two. So in verse 7, he's trying to correct their misperception, that they have a perspective that's wrong. Gently but firmly, he gets to the heart of the problem, telling them what he does in verse 7 to verse 8. They're making judgments based on appearances. And often, when people criticize, it's because they're not looking deep enough. They take things at face value, not bothering to look beneath the surface or stand in the other person's shoes. Paul says, however, a knee-jerk reaction to criticism can cause the same problem. So before we take offense, we need to take a look at ourselves from others' perspectives, but they need to look at me from that perspective as well. But then, while they're challenging his authority here in verse 7, in verse 8, he says, let me clarify my motive here. For even if I should boast somewhat more about our authority, which the Lord gave us for edification, and not for your destruction, I shall not be ashamed, lest I seem to terrify you by letter. Paul makes sure his critics understand what's in his heart. Authority comes with a mandate of building up, not tearing down. What are they doing? Are they building up or tearing down? You remember what he said in chapter 2? They come and they're hucksters. They take advantage of you. The authority we have as an apostle has come. We're building up. Yeah, Paul feels kicked around at this time. And yes, he is bruised at this time. But Paul says, they think we're overemphasizing our authority. Let me tell you something here. As far as he is concerned, he has every right to boast, but the boast is not in himself. The boast is because of what God has done. This whole authority that God has given him as an apostle is to build up. This is a direct hit at these false apostles. But Paul and his helpers have built up so beautifully. These have come in to tear down and to wreck. And that is for your own personal destruction. But we came to build you up. And so, he will come then to verses 9 and 10. For his letters, they say, in other words, Paul, you're just unimpressive in appearance. You're not great to listen to. For his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak. His speech is contemptible. It's slander that is spreading about in Corinth, that his letters are heavy and strong, so as to scare one. But bodily presence is weak and never scares anyone. The critics have shown their superficiality. Secular history does record that there was nothing really that was tremendously becoming about Paul. But that aside, whether that's true or not, Paul said, they think we are weak and contemptible. Rather, verses 11 and 12, Paul says, we are genuine. Look at our authenticity. Let such a person who says we're weak consider this, that what we were in word, by letters, when we were absent, such we will also be in deed when we're present. In other words, what he's saying is, we've been consistent. How you see us at the grocery store on Thursday is the same way we presented ourselves to you when we were before you. There was no inconsistency. What I am in my writings is what I am when I'm present with you. I'm not present with you behaving one way and write to you another way. What you see of me on Thursday at the grocery store is exactly what you see of me when I'm writing right now. I have had consistent behavior. And then he says, verse 12, we would not compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. Such subjective comparisons are meaningless. So when these false accusers started, they implied that they were better than Paul. That although they wrote no letters, their bodily presence and their face-to-face speech was vastly superior to Paul. Those who recommended themselves never need anything more. They have their reward. As far as they were concerned, they were always 100% according to their rating. How can anybody classify them otherwise? They recommended themselves. They're high, all right, but they put themselves there. And Paul says, we are counted. We're counted out. Not even by comparison is this possible. But look, he was who he was. He felt no need to compete with anyone or hide any part of his personality or his letter. He's genuine through and through. As Popeye would say, I am what I am. But then look at verse 13. Paul communicates the facts. We, however, will not boast beyond measure, but within limits of the sphere which God appointed us, a sphere which especially includes you. For we're not overextending ourselves, as though our authority did not extend to you, for it was to you we came with the gospel, not boasting of things beyond measure. You see what he's playing on there? That is in other men's labors, but having hope that as our faith increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you in our sphere. We will not boast beyond measure, not boasting of things beyond measure. So Paul plays this element of folly. We had a standard of measuring ourselves, not one we set up, not ourselves, but one which God gave. And anyone who cares to measure us, use the standard by which God uses to measure us. Because we expect to carry the gospel far beyond Corinth, even to Spain. Measure us by that. We're not crowding into other men's labors, stealing the fruits of their work, which is what these Judaizers were doing, making ourselves the standard of measurement. No, no. Paul says, we are lowly. We come in the meekness and gentleness of Christ. But we're not little cowards. We're not little cowards who make a fist at a distance and wreck the lives of people. We've come to use our ability to build up. Paul may have been no great shakes to look at, but his word amounts to everything. Paul had established churches. He had established Corinth. He's not comparing himself with these false apostles, but he's elevating himself above them, saying there's no comparison. But Paul could not make the comparison if he tried. Only because of what God had done in him could he make that comparison. And so he says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to apply the real norm. And we hope you apply that to us as well. It's not the deceptive measuring by using the divisive elements or divisive means of measuring, but it's the rule, the genuine rule of God. Anybody can see it. Look, we planted with the truth. We did it in Corinth, and we're going to do it in other places. So measure by that. Listen to what he says. Back up to verse 14. We're not overextending ourselves, as though our authority did not extend to you, for it was to you that we came with the gospel of Christ. Not boasting of things beyond measure. See, that's what the Judaizers had done in verse 12. That is another man's labors. We've not come in stealing or building on somebody else's labor, but having hope as your faith increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you and your spirit to preach the gospel in regions beyond you. Look, we're not just staying here. Measure us by our work. Look at the work we've done here. Look at the work they're doing. They're tearing down. We're building up. In fact, we're going other places. Measure us by that. Not to boast another man's sphere of accomplishment. We're not here building on what somebody else has done. We're preaching in all these countries. We're spreading the gospel. We're establishing churches. We arrived first ahead of anyone else. These false ones broke in on our work. They invaded the work of others. Their whole world is open to them in order to spread their error, if they must do so. But they make it their business and their delight to invade the congregations which were long ago built upon the true gospel. Paul said, we were here first and we are going there first. They boast in regard to things that no man can measure. They have to do that, or else people would see right through them. Why? Because craftiness is their game. Their measure, which is in no sense a measure at all, so that the things they do remain not measured at all. But that's where their boast is at. But our hope is that as your faith grows, you'll come to appreciate the rule by which we are measured. And we seek to glorify God. And what is that? We establish the gospel with you, and we're taking the gospel other places. Verse 17 and 18. For he who glories, they glory in the Lord. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord approved. Paul says, we hope to preach the gospel in other places beyond you, but we will not glory in other man's rules of measurement. Let's give a summary of this. Paul reminds them of his ministry that was given to him by God. We see that in verse 13. We, however, will not boast beyond measure, but within the limits of the sphere which God appointed. He tells them his reason for coming to Corinth was to bring good news, verse 14. For it was to you that we came with the gospel. He reminds them that he's never lorded his leadership over them. On the contrary, he's looked forward to learning from them, verse 15. Not boasting of things beyond measure, that is, another man's labors, but having hope that as our faith increase, we shall be greatly enlarged by you. He repeats again that Corinth is not his only place of ministry. His involvement reaches beyond, to areas, regions beyond, verse 16, to preach the gospel in regions beyond. He's separated his ego from the Corinthians' response to him. His role is much bigger than Corinth. He serves there because God has called him to do so, not because he needs to have a place of power. That's what the Judaizers need. Paul says, I'm owning this. I have been genuine with you. And what you see in me before and later is what you see now, but not them. And by the way, measure me by a standard of God's measurement, by the work he's assigned me to do, not by their false measure of how they come in and take the accomplishments of another man. So you can see Paul gets rather pointed with them. In chapter 11, he'll continue this kind of pointed dialogue. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again when we get cover chapter 11. Thanks.